What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT. And man, Super Bowl 58 is here. We've been waiting all year long for this game. And it's always bittersweet talking about the Super Bowl. Because it's like, yeah, this is the biggest game of the season. We're about to see who's going to win the Super Bowl, who's going to take home the Lombardi. But it's also going to be the last Sunday of NFL football for the next 7-8 months of the year. So it's always a bittersweet moment for me talking about the Super Bowl, but tonight we got Super Bowl preview and prediction on deck. Also, can Brock Purdy be trusted? The 49ers defense, they also got ripped by their defensive coordinator Steve Wilks. Are they going to be able to slow down Patrick Mahomes? Head coaching hires. There are 8 new head coaches that have just been hired. I'm going to be ranking all of them in order from which coaches I have the most confidence in that will succeed to the coaches that I have the least amount of confidence that will succeed. We're also going to get into some college football topics. College football is scaring away their head coaches. Their head coaches don't want to coach the sport no longer. Jeff Hafley, the Packers' new defensive coordinator, he said that he wants to coach football. And college football is not about coaching football. It's about, you know, managing how much money your team has to spend to keep said players from transferring or to get guys from the transfer portal. And then Washington made some two really interesting hires when it comes to their offensive and defensive coordinator spots. Before you get into it, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel, we're a podcast, and you can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. Listen, if you like the content and you want to know how can we support the podcast, JT, all we ask is that you give us a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify and share the pod with your friends, family members, and acquaintances. All right, so let me make sure I got my phone on D&D because we don't want no interruptions when I'm giving my Super Bowl predictions. Now let's get into it. So there was a bombshell story that dropped about the New York Jets and how much of a nightmare this past season was for them when Aaron Rodgers got injured. And I mean, we knew that the New York Jets season was over when A-Rod got injured, but his injury exposed a lot of things wrong with this organization. Other than the fact that they made a huge mistake drafting Zach Wilson. Oh, and you guys remember that report that came out that said that Zach Wilson was scared to be the starting quarterback again after he got benched? Well, it actually was true. This article, they revealed that Robert Saleh wanted his head coaches or the coaches on his staff to give them their cell phones to him just so he could go through them to see who was the one to leak the story. Not only that, but the whole Zach Wilson, Aaron Rodgers relationship that we all were at all, that we saw during Hard Knocks, well, that thing evaporated after Aaron Rodgers got injured. And eventually, there was a part of the season when Aaron Rodgers pretty much went Casper on Zach Wilson. And then Robert Saleh being like the adopted dad to Zach Wilson, doing everything he can to protect him from criticism, protecting him from losing his starting job, wanting to make sure that he gets every opportunity to prove himself. That was a huge reason why the locker room started to sour, because they knew that Robert Saleh was playing politics. And when you keep continuing to force a guy like Zach Wilson to show you something that he's not, you get these kinds of results. Now, Zach Wilson, in hindsight, was the best quarterback that the Jets had playing this year outside of Aaron Rodgers. And they possibly could have went out there and traded for Joshua Dobbs or tried to sign a guy like Carson Wentz in free agency, but they didn't want to. Why? We will never know. But it probably is because their general manager, Joe Douglas, and head coach Robert Saleh wanted to give Zach Wilson every chance to show himself as the franchise quarterback for this team. And every opportunity that he got, he fell short every single time. Even in his best game against Kansas City Sunday night, he balled out. nearly outplayed Patrick Mahomes and yet still found the way to lose the game for the New York Jets. So what does that mean for 2024? Well, I think it's pretty evident that this season is Aaron Rodgers or bust. If Aaron Rodgers comes back and he reverts back to the level that he was pre-injury, Robert Saleh, Joe Douglas are probably going to be around for the next three more years if this team makes it into the playoffs. But if they don't and it backfires in their face like how the Brett Favre New York Jets saga did, then Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas are going to be in the unemployment line at the end of 2024. Now, how do I think this thing is going to go? I really believe that it's going to work. Are they going to be a juggernaut in the AFC? No, but I do expect them to be a 10-11 win football team. This defense was really good this year. Their defense carried the team for nearly the whole entire season until they lost a little bit of steam in December. And if they would have had Aaron Rodgers in three or four games, they would have been in the playoffs. There are games that they lost where the offense couldn't get anything against trash teams because Zach Wilson just wasn't it at quarterback. And they're going to improve the offensive line. I believe that Aaron Rodgers getting injured allowed the New York Jets more time to put themselves in the spot where they can go all in. And this is going to be that year that they can go all in. Nobody thinks Robert Saleh is a great coach. I don't think he's a bad coach neither. You need a good quarterback in this league to succeed. One thing that's been constant about Robert Saleh as the head coach in New York has been the fact that these defenses under him have been really good. Nathaniel Hackett isn't a good offensive coordinator. We know that. That was also revealed in the article that a lot of players didn't really like Nathaniel Hackett like that. Not because he was a bad dude, but just because a dude doesn't know what the hell he's doing. We know the sole reason Nathaniel Hackett is there is because of Aaron Rodgers, and that's why this team fell short this year. Because this was a team made for Aaron Rodgers. Randall Cobb, Alan Lazard, all those moves were made to appease Aaron Rodgers. So therefore, it's no surprise that the season went left the way that it did when he wasn't able to play. And once again, Aaron Rodgers is in the spotlight. And his play this season is going to not only define the fate of Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, but it's going to define how he ends his career. Is he going to end his career going out on top like Peyton Manning and Tom Brady? Or is he going to go out in the worst state possible? Because we know that he's not getting any younger. But most people that you talk to, if they were to give you their top five quarterbacks, Aaron Rodgers would be mentioned in that conversation. And Aaron Rodgers going out in a bad way to close off his NFL career, I just think will be a sour note to end off his legacy. Because when you think about Aaron Rodgers, you think of one of the most talented quarterbacks in NFL history, but you wonder why he doesn't have more championships. You always think about what could have been if Aaron Rodgers had the right situation. And New York, he's basically calling the shots. He's running the operation. Okay, he's the general manager, the damn coach. Look at all the guys who are on the team who shouldn't be on the team because of Aaron Rodgers. This is his football team. And the Jets' success this year is going to be all dedicated on if Aaron Rodgers can return to that bad man or if he's going to be that retired man at the end of the year. That was a big reason why the New York Jets franchise continues to be a constant disappointment. There's a lot of chaos ensuing in the New York Giants front office. I mean, you have Wink Martindale cussing out Brian Daboll. You have Mike Kafka not getting along with Brian Daboll neither. You have a quarterback situation that is a huge question mark because, let's be honest, mostly everybody knew that the decision to give Daniel Jones that big-time extension was idiotic. It was the equivalent to when the Jaguars gave Blake Bortles that long-term extension after he led them to the AFC Championship a while back. And now because you made that decision and it backfired really ugly in your face, you now have concerns about how you're going to address the future of your quarterback position. Because on one end, You have the 6th overall selection in this year's draft, which probably puts you in prime position to get either Jaden Daniels or Drake May, depending on how the chips fall. And let's say you want to draft one of those guys. What are you going to do with Daniel Jones? Are you going to have a backup quarterback making $40 million? Because you can't trade him. Nobody's going to take on that contract. And the biggest mistake that the Giants made with the Daniel Jones situation is that they overpaid for a player that nobody would have given that same contract to anywhere else. If they would have just told Daniel Jones, you know what? You want all this money? You feel like you're worth this? Go out in free agency and show us that you're worth it. Why not have given him the restricted free agent tag? Like how the Baltimore Ravens did with Lamar Jackson. If a team wants you, they can show you what you're worth. They can offer you these draft picks, and you can go play for them. And we won't match if we don't feel you're worth it. Nobody was going to give Daniel Jones $40 million. That was an idiotic decision, and that's why the Jets are in the situation that they're in right now. You see, Joe Schoen, their general manager, outside of hitting on Jalin Hyatt and Deontay Banks, he hasn't done a good job of building this team up through the draft. And his free agency signings last year were god-awful. We know Darren Waller can play, but that's the problem. When he can't play, he can never fucking play. He's always injured. And Paris Campbell, bro, that was one of the worst free agency signings of last year. Because this dude didn't do anything. And why would they even give him the money that they paid him in free agency when the dude only had like one good season out of the 4 or 5 years that he's been in the NFL? And his career highs weren't even 1,000 yards. The only promising thing about the future of the Giants offense is Jalin Hyatt. If you can give Jalin Hyatt a somewhat decent quarterback and actually give him chances to get open downfield, he could be a really good deep threat in this league. But outside of him, there's nothing else to be excited about on this offense. And the reason why I don't include Saquon Barkley is because we don't even know if he's coming back when he should be coming back. If you're a Giants fan, I'm going to just give you a warning about what you're going to be in store for this season. You're going to be in store for something that you probably might not want to watch. Okay, if I was you, I would just watch the Giants games for the first 3 weeks of the season. And then when I start 0-3, find another team to root for the remainder of the season. Or maybe just occupy my Sundays with something else better to do. Because watching the New York Giants, I promise you, if you're a Giants fan, there are so many better things that you can do with your time other than watching the tragedy that you're about to see transpire this upcoming season in 2024, bro. Because the Giants are going downhill. Brian Daboll can't get along with the coaches on his staff. I mean, what's going on here? This team went from being the Cinderella of the NFL not too long ago, Brian Daboll winning coach of the year, to all of a sudden, his job security is on the line. Hell, there were rumors that said that the Giants might consider replacing him with Bill Belichick. It's not looking good right now. It's not looking good. And Daniel Jones, you can say he could have gotten better as the season progressed, but let's be honest, the games that he played in were god-awful, and he didn't even look good against the Arizona Cardinals. The dude had more interceptions than touchdowns. So it's like, even when he comes back, he's not going to be that big of an upgrade. The Giants are one of those teams that they really have to make sure that every move they make this offseason is well thought out, calculated, because it has to work. Your offensive line has been god-awful for the last 5 to 6 years. You haven't had good quarterback play ever since Eli Manning retired. And you continue to go through these carousels of head coaches that show promise in their first year and then regress right after. The last couple of coaches that the Giants have had have all had success fairly early, and then they fall off right after. This franchise continues to go in circles. When are they going to get some stability in the front office? When are they going to hire the right head coach that knows how to be a good leader of men? Something that Tom Coughlin was. They keep struggling to find that. Like, The poor drafting, the poor roster decisions, the Giants are in really bad shape heading into this offseason. I don't expect anything to change. I mean, you made the terrible decision to trade for Darren Waller, sign Paris Campbell, extend Daniel Jones long term. I mean, what makes you think that this front office is capable of making better decisions this go around this offseason when they haven't been able to show the ability to do that last offseason? When somebody shows you who they are the first time, you got to believe them. This is a stupid front office. And Brian Daboll is maybe one of those guys that's cut out to be a good coordinator. He's just not head coach material because he can't get along with the coaches on his staff. Mike Kafka grew into dislike this guy, and Wink Martindale cussed this dude the hell out. I haven't heard no other stories about Wink Martindale cussing out any other head coach he's worked under. The future of the New York Giants looks really dark. If you're a Giants fan, please listen to my warning. Do not watch this team next season because you're wasting your time. There are a lot of better things that you can do with your year other than watching it on the New York Giants. Before I give you guys my Super Bowl preview and prediction, if you haven't already, hit that like button, subscribe to the channel, help us out. Give us a 5-star review. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. And before we get into my Super Bowl preview and prediction, go ahead and listen to this word from our partner, Mint Mobile. Does it piss you off how much you pay for your monthly phone bill? Why are you getting frustrated when our partner, Mint Mobile, has plans as low as $15 a month that give you unlimited talk and text on the nation's largest 5G network? Stop getting frustrated with how much you spend on your monthly phone bill and go to trymintmobile.com/JTSports in the description and pinned comment down below to get access to premium wireless for only $15 a month. That's only $15 a month. Switching to Mint is easy. It only takes 15 minutes to do. If you're pissed off with how much you pay for your monthly phone bill, switch to Mint Mobile today and go. Super Bowl 58 is here, people. We got the Kansas City Chiefs taking on the San Francisco 49ers. Kansas City, nobody expected this team to be in this game. All right. At most, you thought that they were going to go one and done in the playoffs. And then you got the San Francisco 49ers, which pretty much has been the best team in the NFC for all of this season, led by Mr. Irrelevant, who is fighting for the respect he deserves. Because he balled out during the regular season. He's an MVP finalist for a reason. However, there were questions about how truly good this dude is. Is he the taxi driver? Is he being carried by a great supporting cast? Or is he actually part of the reason why the 49ers are in this game? He's going to have every opportunity to show that and prove all his doubters and naysayers wrong because he's going up against Patrick Mahomes. The biggest question with the 49ers offensively is going to be, can they get out to a fast start? Their last two games, they've all been great performances in the second half, but less to be desired performances in the first half. Kyle Shanahan's play calling has not been that great. Brock Purdy isn't as good in the first half as he is in the second half. And going up against Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, this is the last team that you can afford to go into halftime down against. You have to start out fast. Because if you allow Patrick Mahomes and Kansas City to get in rhythm and get momentum early, they're going to carry that momentum for the rest of the game. And the last time these two teams met up, San Francisco had the game in their hands until Patrick Mahomes woke up the last 7 minutes and some change in the fourth quarter. And the difference in this game is going to come down to, can Brock Purdy make big throws in the fourth quarter? We know Mahomes is going to be able to, but can he do it? Josh Allen wasn't able to do it. He wasn't able to connect on that big throw to Stephon Diggs late in that game. He also missed Stephon Diggs when he was wide open on that third down, and he overthrew the dude for the touchdown. Lamar Jackson had a costly interception and triple coverage late in the fourth quarter in the AFC Championship. If you want to be able to beat Patrick Mahomes, your quarterback has to be able to make big throws in the fourth quarter and crucial downs. Hell, when San Francisco lost with Jimmy Garoppolo, we all remember that throw when he overthrew Emmanuel Sanders. Brock Purdy's legacy is going to be defined by what he does in this game. And I know that this dude is only in his second season, but remember what happened to Jimmy Garoppolo. Before that Super Bowl, the majority of people out there in the media considered Jimmy G to be a top 12 quarterback. All of a sudden, he overthrows Emmanuel Sanders. He gets outplayed in the fourth quarter by Patrick Mahomes after outplaying him for the majority of the game, and the narrative starts to flip. And then all of a sudden, he's no longer with the 49ers, and they draft his replacement. Brock Purdy, if he can lead the 49ers to a win in this game, he wins Super Bowl MVP. The narrative that is thrown out about him is going to be forever altered. It's going to be forever changed. He may not ever be regarded as an elite quarterback, but at least he'll have respect. Like Joe Flacco, have respect. Nobody looks at Joe Flacco as one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, but he has a lot of people's respect because of what he did in that Super Bowl against the San Francisco 49ers and how he elevated his game during the Ravens playoff runs. This is Brock Purdy's chance to enshrine himself in history. You can be the best Mr. Irrelevant pick in the history of the NFL draft. Not just that, but the narrative about what you need to win the Super Bowl to be able to compete is going to change, because if Brock Purdy can win you a Super Bowl, that shows you that, oh, well, maybe we don't need a superstar quarterback like a Patrick Mahomes or a Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson to win. We can win with a quarterback that can execute the offense. Think about how good that's going to look for guys like Tua Tagovailoa, Jared Goff. They may not have all the elite intangibles that you look for, like a guy like Mahomes or Burrow or Josh Allen have, but they're still good enough that if you give them the proper situation, they can win. Kansas City, though, they're fighting for the title of being the next dynasty in the NFL. The undisputed next dynasty. Because I don't believe they're a dynasty quite yet. For me, a dynasty is you got to do it three times. And the New England Patriots dynasties, it's so fascinating because when they won their last three Super Bowls, those were nowhere as good as teams as what they had when they won their first three. Excuse me. And even then, the best teams the Patriots have had have never won championships. They went undefeated with prime Tom Brady and Randy Moss and lost to the New York Giants and Eli Manning. Twice, when they had the better team. Kansas City, it should be no surprise that they're in the Super Bowl. Because when you have Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid, they can still be a championship team, even when on paper, they don't look like they have a championship caliber roster. They got a great defense led by DC, Steve Spagnuolo. He's been one of the best defensive coordinators in the league over the last decade. And he's going up against Kyle Shanahan, who is notoriously known for choking in the Super Bowl. The last time the 49ers played up against Kansas City, Steve Spagnuolo's defense came up clutch in the fourth quarter. And remember, when Kyle Shanahan was the OC for the Atlanta Falcons, when they choked that 28-3 lead, he was the OC calling plays, and that choked job too. There's a lot at stake for not just the Chiefs, but for Kyle Shanahan. But when you look at this Chiefs defense against San Francisco's offense, they match up way better on paper than what a lot of people are giving them credit for. The Chiefs have two really outstanding corners, Trent McDuffie, Legarius Sneed, who's made a lot of big plays throughout this playoff run for Kansas City. We already know about the monster in the middle that they have and Chris Jones, but George Karloftis, you have to worry about him as well. They got great linebackers. Nick Bolton damn near won Super Bowl MVP last year in this game. And the back end of their secondary is really good also, despite the injuries that they had to deal with. So San Francisco, yeah, they got Deebo and Brandon Ayuk, but Kansas City has two really good cornerbacks that match up well with them. They also are pretty good against the run. San Francisco, their bread and butter is their ability to run the football. And if they can't have success running the ball with Christian McCaffrey, because Detroit, their run defense was really good in the first half. And even when Christian McCaffrey somewhat got going in the second half, it's not like he was running all over Detroit's defense. Detroit had a very good game plan. Kansas City, what they've demonstrated throughout this playoff run is that they're not the same team that they were the previous week. You know, like I was telling my homie, when the Ravens were going into that game against Kansas City, that, yeah, Kansas City gave up a lot of rushing yards to the Buffalo Bills, but they're going to have a way different game plan against Baltimore than what they were going to have against Buffalo. And that proved to be true, because Baltimore, they were scared to run the football against Kansas City, and they played right into their hands, which is their ability to stop the pass. If this becomes a game where Brock Purdy has to play from behind and they need him to throw the football a lot more to get them back in this game, they're not going to win. There's a reason why Kyle Shanahan doesn't have a winning record when he's trailing after halftime. This is not a team that's equipped to beat Kansas City, and they have to do it coming back from a big lead. They got a great defense that's well-coached. Hell, I was surprised that Detroit's defense played as well as what they did against the 49ers when they actually were playing well, because that secondary was not good and it wasn't holding up. You got a team that's good on all levels. They can get after the quarterback. The 49ers don't have good interior guards. That's something that isn't getting talked about enough. Like Kansas City's defense, which has been the main reason why they've gotten to the Super Bowl, they got a really good matchup against the 49ers offense. And I don't think that this 49ers offense is going to be as all-world as what people think against KC's defense. This defense is a great matchup for what San Francisco likes to do offensively and schematically. It's not like they haven't seen an offense like this before. Hell, Kyle Shanahan's offense is being used by half of the coordinators in the NFL right now. So, Kansas City, offensively, against the 49ers defense, this is really where the pendulum swings for this Super Bowl, right? Because Mahomes and this Chiefs offense, they just find ways to put shit together and make it work every single week. They got the 17 against the Baltimore Ravens. It was a knockout, drag-out brawl, but we saw how many points they were able to hang on the Buffalo Bills. This is an offense that, right now, they're functioning on pure adrenaline and desire to win another Super Bowl. Patrick Mahomes is in a different bag in this playoff run for Kansas City. This is probably the best that Patrick Mahomes has ever played at any point in his career. Like, he's playing damn near perfect. He's not making no mistakes. He's picking his spots, and he's never missing on any big throw. That throw to MVS late that sealed that game against the Ravens was a throw that they missed on early during the season. If my memory serves me correctly, it was either against the Eagles or the Packers. MVS, Kadarius Toney, whoever else they got at wide receiver, they may not be the best of talent, but they're good enough to get it done against a questionable secondary. The 49ers defense is really overrated. Everybody thinks about all the talent that they have. All the big names, Nick Bosa, Rick Armstead, Chase Young, Tre'Davious Ward. But when you watch the games, a lot of those guys aren't really showing up. Chase Young, I haven't heard this dude's name since he got traded from Washington to San Fran for a third-round pick. And his ass was making all kinds of mistakes last week. You know, Steve Wilks, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, he called out the 49ers defense for their lack of effort in the NFC Championship. Part of that is because Chase Young is doing his own thing. Either he doesn't know the assignments, or he's just freelancing, doing whatever out there. He isn't a guy that's coachable. You can't have players doing their own thing when you're going up against Patrick Mahomes. Why do you think Tom Brady and Bill Belichick were so successful, despite not being the most talented team in every Super Bowl that they won? Because they don't kill themselves. They were always well-disciplined. They were always well-coached. They always stayed true to who they were. The 49ers don't have a great defense. Kansas City, they may not have big names offensively, but they got Mahomes, they got Isaiah Pacheco, and you can run the football on San Francisco's defense. Hell, Detroit at halftime had like 130-something yards running the ball against the 49ers defense. This is not the impenetrable defense y'all think it is when you look at it on paper. This is a defense that is not playing good right now, and they're on life support. And Patrick Mahomes is probably about to put the killing blow to him. It was one point this season when people thought Steve Wilkes should have been fired when they went on that three-game losing streak before their bye week. The 49ers defensively have a lot that they have to prove in this game. This is not a good defense. Kansas City, they're playing their best on the offensive line that they have all season long. This offensive line struggled for the majority of the regular season. It's not until now, all of a sudden, this offensive line is playing well. And that's been the driving force in Kansas City's wins in the postseason this year. They beat Baltimore. Baltimore, they got the best defense in the NFL. Tons of monsters up front. And yet they still were able to have a little bit of success offensively that propelled them to the win. So when you look at the 49ers defense, if they don't show up in this game and this defense doesn't play up to the level of talent that everybody likes to name, Nicholas, John, Nicholas, John, Bosa, like Fred Warner. Like, cool, they got a lot of big name players that are considered to be the best at their position, but where are those guys going to be at in this game? Where were they against the Detroit Lions or the Green Bay Packers? Like, they were getting carved up by Jordan Love. I didn't forget that game. You see, once you get to the playoffs, the team that you were in the regular season may not be the same team that you are in the playoffs because it's a different brand of football. Kyle Shanahan doesn't know how to win in games like this. Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes too. That's why I got to take Kansas City to get the win. Listen, I can't bet against Patrick Mahomes, and I also can't bet against Andy Reid, and I can't trust Kyle Shanahan. Now, can I trust Brock Purdy? Maybe. You know, I'll get into him a little bit later, but Kansas City, to me, they aren't the best team on paper, but the best team doesn't always win the Super Bowl. The team that wins the Super Bowl is the team that can step up in the big moments. The team that is going to be the most well-coached, isn't going to kick themselves in the foot. I trust Kansas City way more than I trust the 49ers. There's been nothing that I've seen out of the 49ers in their last two playoff games that give me any reason why I should trust them. You start out slow. Your defense is getting ripped by their DC for their lack of effort. This is not anything that would give me any confidence in picking them to win. And if you're a 49ers fan, I know you're going to push back against this and you're going to make up reasons why. But listen, this is not the time of the season and the biggest game of the year, the Super Bowl, where you should be having to call out your defense for effort. You know, at this point of the season, you are what you are. And what the 49ers are is a team that has gotten through majority of these games because, yeah, they got some red flags, but they've been able to out-talent everybody. They've been able to find a way. You can't find a way against Patrick Mahomes. You got to come ready. You got to come prepared when you're going against Patrick Mahomes. You can't expect to beat Mahomes starting out slow, having your quarterback having several interceptions. You know, Brock Purdy, this is going to be the game of his life. If he can come out and outplay Patrick Mahomes, he already has my respect. But there's no way nobody in the media can't give this dude respect if he can outdo Mahomes. This dude is like the greatest quarterback of our era right now. But I don't think that's going to happen. There's a reason why these superstar quarterbacks are getting paid the money that they are. There's a reason why Mahomes has the reputation that he has around the league as the next GOAT. You want to know why? Because you know, regardless how the game starts, you know that you're going to get his best performance at the end. Because that's when it matters the most. And when the lights are the brightest, that's when Patrick Mahomes makes the big plays. Brock Purdy, you can say the same thing for him, but we haven't seen him going up against a quarterback as good as Patrick Mahomes. The last time we saw Brock Purdy against an elite quarterback, you know, he got outplayed by Jordan Love, and he got outplayed and outshined by Lamar. He threw four interceptions in that game. I'm taking Kansas City to win. 27-20 is my final score prediction. This is going to be another Super Bowl win for Patrick Mahomes, and this is going to be the Super Bowl that cements Kansas City as a dynasty in the NFL. Now, I got some more things that I got to discuss. I'm going to be ranking every head coaching hire from this offseason, best to worst, based on my amount of confidence in them, least confident to most confidence. College football is scaring away their head coaches. Coaches don't want to coach college football no more. Why? We're going to get into some of the reasons. Hit that like button. Subscribe if you haven't already. Remember that we're not just a YouTube channel. We're a podcast, and you can find us on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. Brock Purdy is the most polarizing player in the NFL. Either you believe in Brock Purdy, you believe he's good enough to lead the 49ers to a win in Super Bowl 58, or you believe that Brock Purdy is only the beneficiary of the situation that he has around him. Great supporting cast, great coaching. Can you trust Brock Purdy against Patrick Mahomes in Super Bowl 58? That's the really big question. That's what I want to know. Because the last two games that we've seen out of Brock Purdy have been a mixed bag. And I'm not somebody who hates Brock Purdy. If you go through the videos that we've uploaded this year on the NFL, you know that I've been a big defender of Brock Purdy. And I even predicted that Brock Purdy was going to get the 49ers to this game. My question is Brock Purdy going to do what Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't do, which is make the big throws in the fourth quarter? Even though Brock Purdy is only 2 years into his NFL career, this game is going to define his legacy. It's going to define what the narrative is going to be about him for the remainder of his career, unless he can get back to this game again. Because think about it. Jimmy Garoppolo was viewed as a top 12 quarterback before he had that Super Bowl performance when he outplayed Patrick Mahomes for the first 3 quarters and 7 minutes of the game. But that was the problem. He didn't show up the last 7 minutes. He had that big overthrow to Emmanuel Sanders, which if that would have landed, and that was an accurate pass, Emmanuel Sanders probably scores a touchdown and that wins the Super Bowl for the 49ers. But since Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't make that throw, what was the narrative about Jimmy G? He's a good game manager quarterback. He doesn't show up in the big moments. And after that, we saw how his career transpired. The 49ers lost confidence in him. When you don't have a quarterback who you can trust in these big moments in the Super Bowl, that's a quarterback who you probably could look to replace in the foreseeable future. This is going to be the game that Brock Purdy really puts his stamp on things in San Francisco. If this is a performance that Brock Purdy comes out and he throws 4 interceptions like he did Christmas Day against the Baltimore Ravens, or if he plays like how he did the first half against the Lions and the Packers, they're not going to win. You see, you can say Brock Purdy played well in the second half. But football is a 60-minute game, not a 30-minute game. And in a game like this, I need your A-plus game, not just in the second half, but in the first half too. You can't afford to take the gamble of trying to come back down 3 possessions against Kansas City. Kansas City is not Detroit. Kansas City has been in this game before, and they know what it takes to win. Brock Purdy hasn't. Kyle Shanahan has been, but he hasn't proven the ability to show that he knows what it takes to win in a game like this. When he was the OC for Atlanta, he was calling plays when they choked that 28-3. Hell, we saw what happened the last time he was in this game. His offense fell apart when they needed to come through the most. Part of that is because Jimmy Garoppolo just wasn't good in the fourth quarter. Is Brock Purdy going to be the same? If Brock Purdy can't be trusted in the fourth quarter to make the big throws downfield, they're not going to win. Because guess what? Mahomes is. I don't care how well your defense plays the first 3 quarters. Your defense can play as good as what they have all season long. But in the fourth quarter, you're not playing against the same Patrick Mahomes that you played in the first 3. Fourth quarter, that's when you're going to get his best. We've seen him have slow starts in this game before, and come back strong in the fourth quarter. You got to be able to put this team away. And I don't know if Brock Purdy has that ability to put Kansas City away. You see, you don't lose to Kansas City. They beat you. You see, the 49ers have to beat Kansas City. They can't give Kansas City any small window, crease of being able to find a way to pull off this win. And that's going to come down to Brock Purdy's performance. And the last two games that I've seen out of Brock Purdy haven't given me a lot of trust that he's going to be able to get it done against Mahomes. You can tell me that he played well when it mattered in the second half. And that's cool. And I know I like to say a lot, it's not about how you start, but it's about how you finish. But there's been a lot of games that I've watched this season, like when they lost in the Minnesota Vikings. That game was on the line in the fourth quarter. He threw two back-breaking interceptions. He threw four interceptions against the Baltimore Ravens. He didn't look good in the first half against the Detroit Lions. Didn't look good against the Green Bay Packers in the first half. He didn't look good for the entirety of that game. I'm not a Brock Purdy hater. I don't hate none of these players. I like to tell the truth. I like to give my opinion, but I liked it to be rooted and something that isn't a narrative. And based on what I've seen out of Brock Purdy the last two games, it doesn't give me a lot of confidence that I can trust him against Patrick Mahomes. You're going up against one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time. Do you know what kind of performance you need to take down Mahomes? Like, you just can't expect to beat Mahomes showing up for one quarter. Mahomes can get away with it because it's Mahomes. And it's not glazing. It's not dick riding. Damn it, it's the truth. And if you can't admit that about Patrick Mahomes, then maybe you're the hater. You see, Mahomes can afford to come out slow because the 49ers don't have a good defense. Because you know what you're going to get out of Mahomes. The greats show up when the game is on the line. Jordan, LeBron, Kobe, Brady. Mahomes is in that discussion. Brock Purdy needs to have ice in his veins. You got to be able to go toe-to-toe with this dude. Lamar couldn't do it. Josh Allen couldn't do it. Hell, he hasn't been able to do it twice. Joe Burrow is the only quarterback that's been able to do it. Why? Because he was able to play mistake-free football and show up in the fourth quarter when it matters the most. He was able to make the big throws. That's what Brock Purdy has to be able to do. And I just don't think he's going to be able to do it. I'm not a Brock Purdy hater. I think he's a damn good quarterback. I believe he should be an MVP finalist. I just don't trust him against the greatest quarterback of our generation right now, of my generation, depending on when you've been born. He's been playing flawless football. Literally. Josh Allen left it all on the field. Did everything. Still couldn't get it done. Lamar Jackson. He's about to win his second MVP. He couldn't get it done. Brock Purdy? If these other elite quarterbacks who we perceive to be more talented than Brock Purdy couldn't do it, what makes you think that Brock Purdy's going to do it after how he's looked these last two games? It's not a 60, it's a 60-minute game, people, not a 30-minute game. I'm not a Brock Purdy hater. I'm just a truther. And I think that the truth is going to reveal itself this Sunday in Super Bowl 58. If you want to win in today's age in football, you need to have a superstar quarterback that can make the throws in the fourth quarter. And I'm not saying that I don't believe Brock Purdy isn't a superstar quarterback, but do I trust him to make those big throws? I don't. I think Brock Purdy is a good quarterback. He's a top 10 quarterback, but he's not an elite quarterback. Mahomes is. And that's going to be on full display when we see Super Bowl 58 play out. And it's not going to be scripted. It's not going to be because it was rigged. It's going to be because Mahomes was able to make the big throws in the fourth quarter and Brock Purdy wasn't. There are huge concerns about the San Francisco 49ers defense going into Super Bowl 58. Defensive coordinator Steve Wilks ripped his defense performance against the Detroit Lions in the NFC Championship, where their effort was called into question. And you're going up against one of the greatest quarterbacks in NFL history this Sunday. This is definitely something that you don't want to hear going into the biggest game of the season. You see, this is the end of the line. This is the finish line. What you are is who you are. It's not a mistake of what transpired against the Detroit Lions. This is who the 49ers defense is and what they have been all season long. A team that looks insanely talented on paper, but underachieves on the field. Chase Young, haven't even heard of this dude since he got traded by the Washington Commanders for what I thought was a bag of Cheetos and a flat soda. When it turns out the Commanders won that trade, they got something out of a player that gives you nothing. And I'm not saying that metaphorically or figuratively. I mean that literally. Chase Young just does his own thing on the field. It makes you even question, why the fuck is he starting if he isn't a coachable player? If he is making the wrong decisions when it comes to wrong fits or playing the run, if he's just running up the field and not trying to do anything, like, why do you have this guy starting? You see, the reason why Kansas City has been able to surprise everybody and make it to the Super Bowl once again when it looks like they were down and out, despite not having a talented team, is because of one thing. They don't beat themselves. They're consistent. They're well-coached, and they give you everything they got every time they take the field. You can't say the same thing for the 49ers when you're cheating your coach. The NFC Championship, the game before the Super Bowl, your effort gets called into question? Playing in the Super Bowl isn't enough for you? You see, when you're going up against Patrick Mahomes, you better be ready. You better not have any effort issues. If you put Chase Young out there, which you will need him out there just because of his athleticism alone, he's so athletic that he gives you the best chance of being able to beat Kansas City, because when Mahomes gets outside the pocket, he's making magic happen. Way more than what he has done in previous years. So you need a quarter, you need an edge rusher like Chase Young, athletic enough to drag this dude down. But if you're questioning his effort and the dude doesn't know the plays, or he's just freelancing out there doing his own thing, then he's just a liability. I mean, you got Fred Warner and you got Tre'Varius Ward and Nick Bosa, but you really need these three cornerstones of your defense to have a standout game. Like, this has to be some of the best games that these players have ever had on the 49ers defense. Under Steve Wilks, because when D'Amico Ryans was the defensive coordinator, we never saw problems with effort, players freelancing and doing their own thing. This defense has to show up against Patrick Mahomes in Kansas City, because if they don't, then this thing could be looking embarrassing at halftime, and it can be looking embarrassing when the final whistle gets blown. It doesn't matter if Kansas City's offense has struggled during the regular season, so has your defense. This offense looks completely different in the playoffs than what they did in the regular season. The 49ers shouldn't be having these issues about effort and who they are as a defense and not being able to play up to the level of talent that they have in the Super Bowl. At this point, your identity should be set. Who you are is what you are. It's too late in the year to be having these questions about the 49ers' effort on defense. Are they going to get everything out of their players? This is the fucking Super Bowl. You're going up against Mahomes. If you don't want it, you don't deserve to be there. They shouldn't have even won that game if their defense wasn't giving it all they have for a shot at the Super Bowl on the line. I don't believe this defense is going to show up against Kansas City. Kansas City, I believe, it scores at least 28 points, maybe 30. This isn't a defense that you can trust. I can trust Kansas City's defense. I don't see problems with effort. I did against the Detroit Lions. For the 49ers, they got shredded by Jordan Love. A young quarterback in his first ever postseason game owned them. It was embarrassing. Like, Jordan Love was doing whatever he wanted. And you can say your defense showed up late in the game and won it, but are they going to be able to do the same against Patrick Mahomes? Can you trust this defense to get a stop late in the fourth quarter if Mahomes has the ball last and needs to engineer a game-winning drive to get the Super Bowl? Can you trust your defense in that situation? I can't. The 49ers' lack of effort is really concerning. It isn't just something that people should look over. And I don't believe it's going to be something that just all of a sudden it changes because it's the Super Bowl. who you are at this time of the season is what you are. It's too late in the season for you all of a sudden to become something that you aren't. If you were showing a lack of effort in the NFC Championship, that shows me a lot about who you are as a defense. Can't trust you against Patrick Mahomes. Love you, but can't trust you guys against Patrick Mahomes, one of the greatest quarterbacks ever. The NFL has 8 new head coaches that have been hired, and I'm going to be ranking all of them from least confident to most confident. Which coaches do I believe have the best chance to succeed? Which coaches do I believe are going to fail and land flat on their face? And this is going to be ranked in 3 tiers. Tier 3 is won't succeed. I don't believe you're going to succeed at all. Tier 2 is you might succeed. There's just a couple of factors that give me a little bit of concern for why you might fail. And then tier 1 is I believe you're going to succeed. There's no way you fail at all. Let's get into it. So tier 3, these coaches, I believe they aren't going to succeed. And we got to start off with Gerard Mayo. The reason why I got him on this list is because he doesn't have a lot of experience as a coach in general. Yeah, he has shared duties as a defensive coordinator, but he pretty much is Bill Belichick's understudy. And Bill Belichick doesn't have a good coaching tree. His best coach under him from that tree has been Brian Flores, and he's a defensive coordinator right now. Gerard Mayo, I like him as a person. I think he's a really good leader, but I don't know if this is the right dude to turn around the Patriots franchise. 7, the Commanders hired Dan Quinn as their head coach. I believe that was a lateral move. I don't really get the big difference between Dan Quinn and Ron Rivera. Both coaches went to a Super Bowl, didn't have any success after, haven't been able to make good hires when it comes to their offensive coordinators. Although Cliff Kingsbury is a really good hire, are you going to be able to get quarterback right? And his defense, when he was the head coach in Atlanta, was only elite for only one season. So Dallas, yeah, he was really good during his time being the DC for them the last couple of seasons, but their defense got exposed anytime they went up against a remotely good offense. They got shredded by the Seattle Seahawks on Thursday night, and they got shredded in their embarrassing loss to the Packers and Jordan Love in the wild card round. I don't trust Dan Quinn as a head coach, and this is an ownership group that has a lot of money, and they had a lot of guys involved in making the decision to bring in Dan Quinn, but they hired the former general manager of the Golden State Warriors to help with the football decisions. Like, that makes no damn sense to me. What does an NBA guy have any knowledge of how the NFL works, of how to build an NFL team? Now, maybe the dude they have watches a little bit of football. I would think that if you work in basketball, you would at least watch a little bit of football in your free time, but I don't know. You know, the Commanders ownership group, they got a lot of money, but it just seems like they're just throwing money just to throw money. They're getting a lot of opinions in the room, and I don't think this was a good hire. I really don't. Bill Belichick would have been a way better hire if you were going to go this route. At 6, Antonio Pierce. Y'all aren't going to like this one, but the reason why he's in this tier isn't because I don't think that he has a chance to succeed, but it's just because he probably has the most impossible situation to have success in out of all the new head coaches who've gotten hired during this cycle. He's in the AFC West when you got to go against Patrick Mahomes twice a season. You got to go up against Jim Harbaugh and Justin Herbert now twice a season. You aren't finna put 40 on them like how you did on Brandon Staley and company at halftime. This is a way different team, and Jim Harbaugh is a proven coach. This isn't a first-time head coach who never coached in the NFL before. His first time coaching in the NFL, you know what he did? He took the 49ers from the pit of despair and took them to 3 straight NFC championships and a Super Bowl appearance. He knows what he knows how to build a winning football team. You want to know why he's going to succeed? Because he's won everywhere that he's been. Antonio Pierce had a little bit of success as the interim head coach of the Raiders last season. But you were going against an AFC West that was really down. Everybody's going to be better. And every coach in this division outside of Antonio Pierce is proven. And he has a lot of guys on the staff with them, helping them out, giving him advice. But this is a really tough situation for a young head coach like Antonio Pierce with not a lot of experience to be in right now. We don't know what the hell they're going to do at quarterback. It's really hard to see Antonio Pierce having success. Not because I don't think he's capable. If he was in the AFC South or the NFC South, I would have him in tier two. But the AFC West is just so tough as a division right now with the coaches and the two good quarterbacks that you got to deal with twice a season. I can't see Antonio Pierce having success in Vegas. I like him. I want him to succeed. I hope that I'm wrong, but it's tough. Now, for our next tier, tier two, these are coaches that, like I said earlier, I believe they could succeed, but there's a few factors that they're dealing with that give me reasons to believe that it could go either way. Now, first of all, this was a hire that I really liked. It was a hire that was good for the young quarterback that they drafted last year, and that's Brian Callahan with the Tennessee Titans. He's been the offensive coordinator of the Bengals since Zach Taylor first got hired by Cincinnati, and he never called plays, but he was part of the game plan, the scouting. He did play a major part in Joe Burrow's development. He never called plays before, which is a little bit of pause, but there's been head coaches who've never called plays before who've been pretty good at it, such as Mike McDaniel with the Miami Dolphins. Brian Callahan also has his dad, who is the offensive line coach now for the Tennessee Titans. So the biggest problem with Tennessee's offense outside of the lack of talent that they've had has been the lack of good offensive line play. And Brian Callahan bringing his dad along should help fix that. But what about the defense? And what about Will Levis? You know, Brian Callahan, I think he could do some good things with Will Levis, but could Will Levis truly ascend into an elite quarterback, or will he just become a marginally okay quarterback? Another thing with Brian Callahan is that he doesn't really have any say in anything with the team. Rand Carthon has been their GM for 2 years now, and he just got promoted to another higher ranking inside of the organization, which he also not only has say in assembling the roster and the personnel on the team, but he's the dude hiring the coaching staff. So maybe Rand Carthon has a little bit too much control for my liking. And with him having so much control, I don't know if Brian Callahan is going to be able to succeed completely with Rand Carthon basically being the dude calling the shots, making the decisions, assembling the team, assembling the staff, and Brian Callahan making it work. So I really don't know. But I do like the hire. I just don't have a high feeling that it's going to succeed. Raheem Morris was a really interesting hire because a lot of people thought that Bill Belichick was going to be the dude calling the shots in Atlanta, but Bill Belichick won a lot of power. He won a lot of say. Raheem Morris, according to some reports out there, was the guy who they originally wanted to hire before they hired Arthur Smith because he was the intern. He was cool with people in the building, had a good energy, but they went with Arthur Smith. They come back to Raheem Morris, who is one of the more respected coaches in all of the NFL. And you can say the Falcons probably should have hired the offensive guy, but Raheem Morris also, during his time when he was with the Falcons under Dan Quinn, he was also helping with the receivers. He was assistant coach on the offensive staff as well. So he has a good knowledge of offense and defense, more knowledge of defense, but he's not like a novice on offense, like how most of these defensive-minded coaches are. And he should understand what he needs to succeed, which is a quarterback. And there are pieces there for him to succeed. But even though I like the hire, I have him in tier two because he doesn't have a proven track record of being a successful head coach. When he was the head coach back in Tampa Bay, he was only 33 years old, so he was young. And we're going to see how he looks the second go around. But the majority of times when you hire a second chance head coach, the only ones that end up being somewhat successful are the ones that have been to a Super Bowl before. Other than that, when you have a head coach that's never won before, most of the times they end up still continuing not to win. Look at Dennis Allen. He went 9-8. They still missed the playoffs in the division that they were favored to win. Nobody expected the Buccaneers to be that good. Hell, even Todd Bowles. You know, he's a second-chance head coach, and he's not even the greatest out there. So second-chance head coaches aren't really all that good unless they are head coaches that have been to a Super Bowl before, like Doug Peterson, Andy Reid. And not everybody is Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll. But Raheem Morris, he has a pretty solid team to work with in terms of young talent. You know, I do think he's a really good fit character-wise. It's just that he just doesn't have that proven track record. And I don't know if he is really for certain going to work and be successful as Atlanta's head coach. Dave Canales comes in at number three. Dave Canales was one of the best hires of this cycle. The only reason he's not in tier one for me is because he's coaching under the most dysfunctional ownership in all of the NFL now that Dan Snyder is out of the league. And many people consider David Tepper to be the second coming of Dan Snyder. And Dave Canales, he has a really good opportunity to take what people believe to be an undesirable job and make it a franchise where they could end up having a lot of success for at least a decade, because they did draft Bryce Young. And I don't care what anybody says, Bryce Young was a generational quarterback. There's a reason why he went number one overall with that small of a frame. You feel me? And he was done wrong by the bad hire that they made with their previous head coach, Frank Wright. And I thought that Frank Wright was going to be a good hire. But the dude just was so old that he just lost all touch with how to build an offense around a young quarterback. And he had nothing to work with. Dave Canales was part of resurrecting the career of Geno Smith when he was with the Seattle Seahawks. He also resurrected Baker Mayfield's career. The Buccaneers only got Baker Mayfield because he was the only halfway decent quarterback that they could afford with their cap situation. The run game under Dave Canales in Tampa Bay this past season wasn't ideal, but that's because that was a team that struggled to run the football last year. Their offensive line wasn't good when it came to run blocking, but they were really good throwing the football. If the ownership doesn't end up being Dan Snyder bad and they can stay out the way and let Dave Canales and the GM make the decisions, this should work. This could be the equivalent maybe to when Sean McVay went to the Rams and saved Jared Goff. Jared Goff, like Bryce Young, was a first overall pick who had a really disappointing rookie season. He had bad coaching, a bad staff, and people gave up on him. And Sean McVay came in and turned him into something special. And now we see how good Jared Goff is right now. He's been to a Super Bowl. He's been to two conference championship games. You need good coaching to succeed. And Trevor Lawrence was done bad by terrible coaching when he had Urban Meyer. And when he got Doug Peterson, we seen how better Trevor Lawrence has looked since. So as long as David Tepper can stay out the cookie jar and he lets Dave Canales do his thing, doesn't take a lot of control of decisions and whatnot, I believe Dave Canales can work. That's the only reason he's not in tier one for me. Tier one, these are the coaches that I believe are going to succeed. We're going to start off with Mike McDonald with the Seattle Seahawks. He's been the defensive coordinator the last two seasons for the Baltimore Ravens. And the reason why I got so much confidence that he's going to succeed is because what did he do so well in Baltimore? He got the most out of the young talent on that team and some of the older talent on that team. Like Jadeveon Clowney had arguably the best season of his NFL career, and he's past 30 years old. Kyle Hamilton, the young safety that they drafted in the first round out of Notre Dame, a lot of people had some concerns about. Some people felt he was boom or bust. Mike McDonald put him in a system that best used his skill set. The problem with Seattle the last decade has been that their defense has pretty much been non-existent. You're getting a guy in Mike McDonald who can take advantage of all the young talent that you've drafted on that defense side of the football and turn it into elite talent. Look at Devon Witherspoon. Look at hell, Boye Mafe, you know, Tyreek Woolen. There are so many young, talented players on the Seahawks defense that a lot of people don't know about, because the defense that Pete Carroll has been running the last couple of years has been mildly outdated. Mike McDonald, hell, he might be able to save Jamal Adams and turn what looks like one of the worst trades in NFL history into a somewhat halfway decent trade. Mike McDonald also is getting an offense that your only question is, how are you going to address the quarterback position long term? Because Geno Smith is still good enough to be the starting quarterback for you next year. But ideally, you will want to get younger at that position. You still have a really good offensive line. You got two very good young tackles, Charles Cross, Abraham Lucas. So the offensive line is damn near complete. Good running backs, great receivers. You nail the offensive coordinator hire, and you do what you do best on defense. The Seahawks could be a Super Bowl contender as soon as next season under Mike McDonald in his first season. That's how good of a coach this dude is. He's considered to be the Sean McVay of defensive coaches. So if that title holds true, Seattle could find themselves in the Super Bowl. And you guys know who has to be number one, Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh was the best hire. This is the best head coach that the Chargers have ever had, and it's going to work. You want to know why? Because there's nowhere that Jim Harbaugh has coached where it hasn't worked. He's won everywhere that he's been. San Diego State, Stanford. He took the 49ers from the pits of irrelevancy to three straight NFC championship games and a Super Bowl appearance. And then he resurrected Michigan football. He's the best head coach that Michigan has ever had. Took them to three straight Big Ten championships and a national championship. It's not one of those things where you're hiring a college coach that has never coached in the NFL before. You don't know if it's going to work out. This is going to work. Why? Because it's worked everywhere that he's coached. He has a great quarterback in Justin Herbert. Yeah, this Chargers team that we see right now may not be the same team that is on the field when the 2024 season kicks off, but Jim Harbaugh, his philosophy, the way he goes about winning wherever he goes, it works everywhere. And there's no reason to expect it won't work when he's getting a quarterback as talented as Justin Herbert. The Chargers have always had talent. The problem has been they've never had great coaching. So these are my rankings of all of the eight NFL head coaching hires, ranked from who I feel is going to fail, who might succeed, to the two coaches in Jim Harbaugh and Mike McDonald, who I believe will succeed. Leave your comments down in the comment section down below. I'm sure a lot of you guys are going to agree with me. College football has a big problem. A lot of their coaches are leaving. Why? Is it because of the transfer portal, NIL, the stupid college football schedule? There are a lot of reasons, but we've seen Nick Saban recently retire out of nowhere. Nobody really saw it coming. And then you see Jeff Hafley, who formerly was the head coach of Boston College, just took them to a bowl game, leave his head coaching position to go be the defensive coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. And you want to know what was reported about the reason why he opted to leave his head coaching job for a coordinator position in the National Football League? It's because he finally gets to coach football. Because college football doesn't allow you to just coach football. You got to worry about managing relationships with boosters because you got to have that NIL money so you can recruit the players in the transfer portal to come play for you and also recruit the players on your team to stay. And when you're coaching at a school like Boston College that is a low-end Power 5 job, or you're coaching at a G5 school, why would you want to be a head coach in this sport when your best players are always going to get plucked from other good teams that can offer them more money? It's not easy to recruit. And then not just that, but recruiting is a 24/7 thing. You don't get no days off from recruiting. It ain't no winter break. You may get like a week off, but you still got to hit that recruiting trail hard. You're recruiting nonstop. There's no break for assistant coaches. Hell, there's not really no breaks for head coaches. Nick Saban, I saw an interview that he did when he said he doesn't even get to watch a lot of his former players in the NFL like that because he's putting in that work on Sunday, watching film after the Saturday game. College football is pushing away their head coaches because it's just too hard to be a damn football coach in college football anymore. Being a football coach in college football requires you to be so much more. You got to know business. I mean, like, I felt Jeff Hafley when he said that you're not coaching football anymore. Hell, Chip Kelly has no problem leaving the head coaching position at UCLA to be an offensive coordinator. There's a problem in college football. The problem is that these coaches are getting overworked, and you're making it too hard for them to have success doing what they love to do. In the NFL, you don't have to worry about none of this shit. You want to know why? Because you have somebody else to handle it. Or it's not a big emphasis. You see, the NFL is straight business. College football isn't football anymore. It's a business, and the coaches have to be involved in the business aspect of it, which can make it difficult for guys like Jeff Hafley, who are out of Boston College, because half your rosters transferring because they want to go to a bigger program that can offer them more money. Why would anybody want to be a head coach in college football anymore unless you're coaching at a blue blood program that has elite resources, elite facilities, and the elite NIL infrastructure that can back them up? Like, why would anybody want to coach at FAU or USF if you're not going to get that financial backing that schools that Alabama and Georgia give their head coaches, and you got to worry about your best players always getting plucked up because bigger schools want them? Like, college football is not in a good state right now. Players are leaving left and right. Look at the situation that Alabama's in right now. Nick Saban retired and everybody started flocking like birds. This is the problem with college football. You are only incentivizing movement amongst your players and coaches, and you're putting these coaches that want to stay loyal to their programs at a disadvantage, that want to build things up the right way, supposedly. But the right way isn't the right way anymore. The right way is the wrong way. The wrong way is, you know, you're trying not to spend money. You want to be, you know, you want to have integrity with how you go about recruiting these players. But it's hard to have integrity in a sport where you just drop bags on players and you're like Ohio State. You got the best team in college football or Texas. And you can say what you want about, you know, it doesn't matter how much talent you have. It's about coaching it. Talent still matters. And the majority of teams that are winning national championships have some of the best rosters in college football. And when you're a school like Boston College, you don't have the same resources to recruit at a top 25 level. You see, at one point, you know, coaching at a school like Boston College was something that nobody would ever think about leaving unless they got a better job. But now it's a job that you're hesitant to take if you want to plan on staying long term, just because the complication that comes from coaching at a school like that. So for a lot of these coaches right now, it's no surprise that they're leaving. NIL, transfer portal has no regulation. And even when it does get regulated, it's not in the right way. They just change the rules whenever they want to. They give you no notice. Nobody understands anything. College football is scaring away their head coaches. And it's no surprise because chaos is ensuing with the transfer portal. Players can leave anytime they want. You got the NIL, which is being leveraged to get these players out of the transfer portal. NIL was never intended for these purposes, but let's be honest. When you make it legal to buy players, of course it's going to be used. So you guys leave your thoughts on how you feel about college football coaches leaving the sport because of everything that's going on from the business side of things. We got some Matrix shit going on down there at Washington University. They hired the two sons of two of the greatest coaches to ever coach the game of football. So they got the son of Bill Belichick, Steve Belichick, as their new defensive coordinator after spending 12 seasons on the Patriots staff under his pops. And then you got offensive coordinator, the son of Pete Carroll, Brendan Carroll. Now, Brendan Carroll should be a name that should be really familiar among Washington fans and college football fans if you follow Jeff Fish at Arizona, because Brendan Carroll was his OC the last 3 years there, and he's had tons of success under Jeff Fish. And he follows him to Washington, where their success on offense should continue going into the Big Ten. Now, defensively, Steve Belichick was really good calling plays the last couple of years for the New England Patriots. He runs a really aggressive style defense really physical, really in your face, send a lot of pressure, man-to-man coverage. I'm really interested in seeing how he meshes coaching the college level. Because when you're coaching in the NFL, it's way different than how you can coach college kids. You know, you can't coach them too tough. And you know, Steve Belichick comes from his pop's level of coaching, so he's probably going to be a little bit of a disciplinarian, but he is only 36 years old. So maybe with him being so young, he'll be able to relate a little bit better. But when it comes to what you're going to get out of your defense this year, this is going to be the equivalent to what Michigan got out of Mike McDonald when he was their defensive coordinator in 2021. Steve Belichick is about to have you playing an NFL-style defense, and you could have one of the best defenses in the Big Ten. And I'm going to be honest with you. My expectations for Washington this year, or Kalen DeBoer leaving, were not that high. And I like Jeff Fish. But now with getting Steve Belichick and seeing the staff that you have coming together, this is a team that could shock some people, and they could be in that Big Ten championship conversation. Because the Big Ten is heavily overrated. There's only been three teams worth watching in this conference the last couple of years. Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan. That's been it. Washington, they are destroying their head coaching hires right now. And the fact that you make two of these legacy hires, like you hired the sons of Bill Belichick and Pete Carroll, you have two sons of two coaching greats, coaching legends, coordinating your offense and your defense. These could be two of the most overlooked hires of the whole entire college football offseason. And it's going to be one of those things that you're not going to know until you're just randomly searching who's Washington's OC. Brendan Carroll, that name sounds familiar. Pete Carroll has a son? Bill Belichick has a son? Yeah. And he was really good calling plays for the Patriots. Like, these are some fantastic hires that Jeff Fish is making at Washington. And you got to have a good coaching staff, because in order to win in college football, you got to be able to recruit, and you got to be able to find ways to maximize the talent that you're able to recruit, because Washington isn't one of those schools that consistently brings in high-ranking recruiting classes every year. So you got to have a coach that can come in there and develop the talent. And that's what Steve Belichick and Brendan Carroll are going to be able to do. And Jeff Fish, for those of you guys wondering how he built this relationship between these two coaches, he has spent a lot of time in the NFL. He's like a journeyman coach until he got that Arizona coaching job. He spent time on the Patriots staff. And, you know, he took a liking to Steve Belichick. He also took a liking to Brendan Carroll on his other stops in the NFL. And that's how he built the relationship between these two coordinators. And I think that these are going to be two outstanding hires by Washington. And they're going to pay dividends this season. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I appreciate you guys for tuning in. If you enjoyed, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that we're not just a podcast. We are a YouTube channel. You can find us on Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from. The JT Sports Podcast is available. I appreciate you guys for tuning in, and I will see you guys Thursday night with another episode.